For the women, this would mean that the division and disjunction between industrial and domestic work could certainly be progressively reduced and discrimination all but abolished, but at the price of an equalization of general unfreedom. However, this conception of socialism is now increasingly shaken, one of the great achievements of the new left. The awareness is spreading that the socialist institutions are socialist only to the extent to which they fundamentally alter all human relationships and initiate a truly new civilization. I conclude my brief presentation. Can we now, in view of these real possibilities of a qualitative change in the mode of life, can we speak of a feminist socialism in contrast to the Marxian concept and call this feminist socialism the fulfillment of the integral idea of socialism? I believe now that the term feminist socialism is grossly misleading. In such a radical transformation of the human existence, the negation of male domination would also, as I have tried to show, invalidate the attribution of feminine qualities to the woman as woman. Instead, these allegedly feminine qualities would become creators and receptors in the society as a whole, in the social organization of labor, in work and leisure, in the social and private relationships, in the male as well as female. Then the liberation of women would also be the liberation of men. And sometimes we and they tend to forget that men also are in bad need of liberation. Thank you.
For the revolution, one finds really get the feeling that the real problem is not that the revolution is not scheduled for next Tuesday at 9:30, but that rather it was scheduled for last Thursday and nobody came. And why not? If you go back to the principles taught to you in Sociology 1 that Marx lays out for changing society, you remember that he said there's both class in itself and class for itself. And of course, the class for itself was recognizing not only that you stand in a particular position vis-a-vis the means of production, but that a lot of other people do too, including women, and that you have a common enemy, and that you better do something about it. Or in the rhetoric of our kids today, you better get your shit together. Now, in my very basic way of thinking, I think we're a long way away from that. Because as I see in what I consider the socialist movement, no way have males gotten the real idea into their heads that women are a part of the working class. I know you know the rhetoric. You can reel off the statistics about how many people are in the working world, etc., and how many of them are females. But in many ways, I don't think you've come to an agonizing and sort of inwardly turning examination of what it means to embrace your sister. I do see the world divided into classes, and I do not think that the Melon heiress is my sister. I don't think she's terribly oppressed by her husband because she took her own fortune and carries it with her. I do see her being oppressive to an awful lot of other people along with her brothers, husbands, and fathers. Now, one thing I'd like to bring in between Kate and Herbert. Economically, I, for instance, see much more chance, really, in what we call the blue-collar worker. At least I find I can deal with his male chauvinism much more easily than I can with some of the more academic and theoretical chauvinism that I run into. We just understand that the working class man, when he comes home to his wife, who has worked a day also, realizes that her salary helps pay the mortgage, and realizes quite sincerely how much better it would be if she made as much as he did. The fact that statistically, the gap is less between the blue-collar male and female than it is between the white-collar male and female is even more important, because their total family income is less than even the middle-class white male. In forming this struggle within ourselves in terms of knowing who our class members are, whether we're talking about a class of women or a more Marxian kind of a class, I think we need to rid ourselves of the elitism that is so inherent in us. Tonight was the first night I got a hold of this protest. As a matter of fact, when it was read over the mic, was the first time I had heard about it. Evidently, there was some price of tickets or something for this performance. But I want to point out a couple of things. You do have here a performance of two elites, two stars, as it were, and people are fighting for tickets to get in. I wonder how many of the people that are even willing to pay whatever the cost was to get into this, to see the two stars, would have fought for the price of going to a meeting somewhere benefit either Gary Lawton or Joan Little, or one of the strikes being carried on. I don't know what's going on in San Diego. I know that recently we had a strike where a lot of women were involved, chic lingerie, and they'd have meetings, and all four of us would show up. You know, they'd ask for donations, and they didn't get $3 from everybody. You know, so I think we really have to go back and say, you know, what am I doing here, too? I mean, granted, you know, I want to hear them, too. but I think you have to say, well, you know, part of the star thing, you know, is the responsibility of you, too. Only an audience makes stars. Washing machines. It makes my husband's role much easier. But I also want to say to you, too, in terms of this responsibility that I'm trying to put over onto you, because I really do think that we need to do a lot of headbanging just to find out where we are, that all of us need to bring into this kind of thing when we talk about socialism and feminism, the fact that our washing machines come off the backs of third world men and women. I mean, you've got to realize that. The fact that you and I can afford a washing machine is indicated by the fact that some woman in Thailand spent all day for 32 cents making the little copper serblings that go into it. And our national system that we support is what keeps them oppressed. And they're far more oppressed even than you see San Diego students. They really are. Or Valley College teachers, for that matter, all right? I don't think that the socialist movement has seriously considered the problem of women. And I think it's with a great deal of gratitude that we turn to people like Kate Millett, who has been able to articulate the very special needs of women within this movement. But I would also like to point out that you have to consider women as you do many other minorities. There is a hatred for women. And I can see it coming out now in young men who are coming out of college looking for jobs. I've always felt sorry for the person who wasn't the son of a Rockefeller, because getting a job has always been tough. But at least 10 or 15 years ago, the white male with a college degree didn't have to compete with blacks and browns and women. And now he's getting awfully upset because he does. And I think you have to understand in terms of, we're not talking about the other minorities tonight, but I think in terms of women, you have to understand that women have always been a very necessary part of the capitalistic system. We're scab labor. We're the non-unionized, lower paid, take the job for much less, kind of a cat that sits around, and because of our needs, will step into a position which a male won't take, which therefore lessens his vitality on the market. That's a very serious thing. That's reason to hate. That is reason to hate. And there is a lot of hatred coming out of that position. It's a difficult thing to look at the male who also does not have a job and say, but, you know, we deserve one too, although we do. And I think this is going to be a very serious problem under a capitalistic form of government because, as I say, capitalism needs us down there at the bottom. Every time they make a war to send the men off, you know, the women go into the factories. I lived through World War II, and I remember the good jobs we were able to get because, you know, the women were taking the male places. And I remember, you know, working at Grant's department store because those women were working in the mail room because those women were taking the jobs of the kids who were taking the real jobs, who were taking the place of the men who went to war. You see. so that we're always a very we're always a very useful adjunct in capitalism. I'm not saying we like it, but I'm saying that we have to think in terms of socialism and ridding ourselves of the capitalist system, along with ridding ourselves of the male chauvinism. I reject the notion that women are tender. I think it's nice, those of us that are, frankly, I think two things. Number one, you look at the history of the tyrants, and you see, for instance, that although in Germany there were very few women Gestapo, those that there were very vicious. I think women can rise to the occasion whenever they are given the opportunity. It's not an occasion I relish, but I don't think it's a biological trait that we are soft, tender, and passive. And I don't think Herb means that we are.
No, definitely.
Definitely not. Okay. I think our training has been somewhat to put us in that role. I am suggesting to you, however, that in terms of my own views of socialism, I have to look at people as being human beings with the capacity of tenderness and love and kindness. I think we've been socialized in different ways, and our unkindness comes out in different ways. I think the hair pulling that women have experienced among themselves, although perhaps less lethal than what the men do, has the same kind of capitalistic competitive hostility in it that anything that they pull off has to offer. For those of you that saw the film Hearts and Minds, I think you saw that the training of our kids in terms of, you know, the males in terms of football, etc., but the girls are always the pom-pom girls, and there's the same kind of competitiveness there. What I would like to suggest then, and perhaps this is just an agonized plea that we begin to do this, is to examine ourselves not only in terms of our feminist motives, but our socialistic motives as well, and really start looking into our heads. I don't know when and where any revolution is going to take place in America. Again, I quit waiting for it. I make my beauty parlor appointments irrespective of, you know, what kind of plans anybody else has. But I think we need to do an awful lot of theorizing in our own self of what class we are in and what kind of oppression we are committing on people of a lower class. Again, I see an awful lot of academic women talking, you know, female rights, and they have a maid who comes in who gets paid $18 a day. Now, that ship ain't going to sail anymore. So that's perhaps a plea to start re-examining the priorities, and a plea to the men also to, for God's sake, start taking seriously some of the really anguished cries that you hear out there amongst your sisters. It's not meant to be something which will make you defensive, but rather, I think it's a cry that's saying, look, we all need to realize what class we're in and try, for God's sake, to work together to bring about a new and better society.